today is case number 56250, Ainsworth versus Newmont Mining Corporation. Again, Chief Justice Sada is out of the jurisdiction on court business. We'll listen to the tapes and then conference with us on this matter for a disposition. Mr. Eckhart, Mr. Schlebs. Mr. Eckhart, you ready? For the appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, Associate Justices. Thank you for this opportunity to present appellant's case to the court. And if I may, I'd like to reserve a portion of my time for a reply. Say 3 minutes. And also, I'd be happy to ask any questions. I think that's the primary value of the oral argument. So. Please ask anytime you would like. First, standard of review, as the court knows, is de novo, and all inferences drawn from the underlying facts must be viewed in a favorable light to the party opposing the motion for summary judgment. This is an appeal from an order of the district court granting summary judgment and subsequent orders. And also, there's case law that says the true motivation of an employer in a termination case is a question of fact. And I'd like to ask you to consider the rest of the case in light of those rulings. And the first issue is that whether the court erred in finding that, the district court in finding that Ms. Sawyer's report to an official of the Nevada Department of Investigation named Dan Teca was not an actual report to a government agency because it occurred in the context of a pre-existing conversation. And what happened is they were discussing matters. The appellants are environmental regulators, and I'll bring out the facts together with a discussion of the law. Environmental specialists for Newmont Mining Corporation and one of their mines out in Winnemucca, and they have practically daily contact with regulating officials. And in the contact, in the course of a conversation, Mr. Teca from NEDP asked if the quench tank, which had been buried yet, and she said that it had, and that was a violation of the permit because they didn't have a permit yet to do that particular act. And sometime later, Mr. Teca came by, visited the site, and told Newmont that they were slipping with regard to environmental matters and looking right at Ms. Ainsworth and Ms. Sawyer, said that if they needed backup from NEDP, it was available. And the district court found that because that was not a special, a separate complaint that had been filed with the agency, that that didn't count, relying on a case called Schlang Airlines, or Schlang versus the airline company. And in that case, the pilots had just made a report in their logbook, and there was no evidence that any regulator even read the logbook. And so the district court, which was a federal district court in that case, found that that wasn't a report. But the facts of this case are very different. Because,
well, your clients didn't initiate that conversation. Is that
no,
correct?
They did not initiate it. They were questioned. They actually were questioned about that.
And they just gave information back and an answer back.
Yes, that's true. They gave a truthful answer back.
How do you go from there to leaping to that being a report in the true sense of the word?
Well, they reported the facts of the case, and it was in response to a question, but it was still a report. And there's two sides to that, as I mentioned in the brief. On the one side, you know, we're arguing that that is a report, and also it's a refusal to do an illegal act, which would be to lie or to deny knowledge. So they're two sides of the same coin.
Is there any indication she knew the ramifications of what she was saying?
Oh, absolutely.
There would be some detrimental...
Absolutely, because okay. That was her job to know that. And in that context, of course, these environmental specialists kind of, in a way, serve two masters. They have to keep on good terms with the agency because they're dealing with them every day, and they have to establish some credibility. But at the same time, their paycheck comes from Newmont. And so, of course, their loyalty is to Newmont, or the employer, which in this case is Newmont. And at the same time, what they're doing is not necessarily contributing to the bottom line. It's actually creating additional costs to other departments because their job is to help the company comply with permits and regulations. And that doesn't actually contribute financially to the company, at least not in the regular bookkeeping sense.
Even if that's accepted as true, how do we get to the unlawful discharge based on the facts that have been presented?
Okay, that's one of the issues. Because if they present a report, then that and they are terminated for in working thing, that's one of the reasons for terminating them was this report. There are many instances recounted in the briefs.
Well, let's go back to the facts. You're
right.
Asserting that was the reason, but didn't we have a reduction?
Okay, yes, there was a reduction in force. What happened is that Newmont, they acquired another mine in that area. I forgot whether it was by purchase or merger or whatever. So they merged those operations, and they determined to reduce the staff. And in particular, they determined to reduce the professional staff and Ms. Ainsworth and Ms. Sawyer's jobs. Many of their duties were covered by technicians rather than professional staff, and there were other staff. But our position is that even if there was going to be a reduction in force. Now, if these two environmentalists were singled out for that reduction rather than two other ones because they had been agitating for compliance and because they had made this report, or Ms. Sawyer had made this report, then that's a wrongful termination.
Well, weren't there facts also to the effect that there may have been other positions available to them and they didn't want to take those opportunities that were presented to them?
That's not exactly how it happened. There had been...
I mean, it's indicated in the briefs there was a refusal that they...
No, there was one other termination. There were no other jobs offered to them. And, in fact, the employer termed as a layoff, but in their termination notices, they were marked as not eligible for rehire. So it was a termination. It wasn't a layoff. No, this is prior to this incident. There had been discussions about other positions. And yeah, Ms. Ainsworth said there was, I think, a job process department that she didn't like working there because she was an environmental specialist. But no, at the time of the layoff, they were not offered other employment. They were just told, you're out of here.
Mr. Agard?
That was the employer stated those things as examples of why they determined to terminate them rather than put them in another job, but it was not actually offered. Yes, sir.
Other than the fact that you ask a trier of fact to draw as an inference that their layoff was caused by the conversation with Tekka, is there any other fact that you can point to that you would offer to the trier of fact?
Yes.
These two individuals were laid off or terminated because of the conversation with Tekka?
Well, only one of them had the conversation with Tekka. Because Mr.
Well, as I understand it, only Sawyer had the conversation
That's right.
with Tekka. The other claimant did not have any conversation or, quote, reporting with a person outside of the company.
Correct.
Okay, so let's stick with Sawyer. What facts would you offer the trier of fact that would enable them to determine that the cause of their termination or layoff was related to the Tekka conversation?
That Mr. Tekka came out to the site and threatened to shut down construction of this quench tank and looked right at Sawyer and Ainsworth and said that they would get backup from NDP whenever they needed it, and that Newmont was slipping in environmental matters. So that created a animosity, if you will, or bad feeling about these employees with the employer.
Did you offer an affidavit from TECA or a deposition?
No, we haven't got.
Did you offer any affidavit or deposition from any Newmont employee who expressed the fact that they were unhappy with TECA's appearance on site and Sawyer's involvement?
No, we didn't get that far, Your Honor.
Did you ask for an extension of discovery under 56E?
Well, I will say that my clients didn't have the resources to do large-scale depositions of all the people. It would have required maybe 20 depositions, and that was just totally beyond their financial scope. So
the answer is no?
So we did not offer those items of evidence that you mentioned. There was also the allegations in the complaint that correspond to that, and the affidavits and the deposition. But there are other items. There were numerous instances that are recounted in the pleadings and in the brief of where these two individuals were constantly agitating for compliance or greater compliance with the environmental standards and permitting regulations, and basically getting stonewalled by the employer so that they acquired kind of the status of troublemakers, if you will, upsetting the apple cart in the company. And the next issue I'd like to address is there's a breach of contract claim. And admittedly, these workers were at-will employees. There's no question about that. And as you know, there's an exception to the at-will status by law in Nevada due to the claim of wrongful termination due to public policy. If someone doesn't act that furthers public policy and gets terminated for that, that's illegal termination. And that's just a narrow exception to their status of at-will employees. Now, the handbooks and the documents that Ainsworth and Sawyer, together with all the other employees at Newmont, were given when they were hired by the company and which they signed, stated that it was the company's policy to adhere with environmental regulations and permits. And moreover, these being professional employees, it's even more their responsibility to do so. And they were specifically told that there will be no repercussions for using that open door policy. So what we're saying is that just as there is an exception to the at-will contact, at-will status by law in Nevada, these documents create an exception by contract to the at-will status. It doesn't mean they have any expectation of continued employment. What it means is that they couldn't be fired for using the open door policy. And there's another instance where an audit team from another portion of the corporation came to visit the site, and Ms. Sawyer and Ms. Ainsworth were the only professional staff that were on site. Their supervisors were not on site on that particular day for reasons that are unknown. And the audit team that was from Denver, right, from their main headquarters and even other international divisions had come. And to Newmont's credit, they do this environmental audit to assure compliance, because this is a far-flung, throughout-the-world company, and they have all these operations all over the place. And Ms. Sawyer and Ms. Ainsworth were very forthright, and Mr. Kurlander, who was heading this corporate audit team, told him there would be no repercussions for being forthright with this audit team. We want to clear up, you know, all environmental issues that may be on this site. And they were, for just one example, there was some smokestacks that were emitting particulates, and the permit said that there was no particulates could be admitted, but they didn't specifically require monitoring. And the audit team asked why this was not monitored. And they had to say that it was because their supervisors, and in this case, I believe it was John Mudge, said they didn't want to monitor it, even though there was emitting particulates, nobody knows how much because it was not monitored. So they made themselves, they didn't make their superiors happy by being forthright with the off-site auditors. And this is one of the many instances where they were constantly doing their jobs, or allegedly doing their jobs too well, and that they were fired for that. And that is an issue of fact that I submit is not properly subject to summary judgment in this context.
Counsel, status of our law, our cases now deal with, in essence, external or going to outside agencies opposed to reporting alleged violations internally. Are you asking us to change our case law?
Yes, to a limited extent. There is case law, the Wiltsy decision, that you have to go actually outside the company to be entitled to any whistleblower protection at all. And the federal court in Nevada said that is a perverse public policy because it encourages employees to call the police right away. And I don't totally agree with that rationale. I think what it does is it encourages employees to shut up, because if they go against their supervisors, then, you know, they get fired for that. If they report something internally and they get fired, they have no recourse. So it's a bad public policy. So I would say, yes, I'm asking you to create a narrow exception for that, and that exception is already anticipated in Bigelow v. Bullard in dicta that is recounted in the brief, but it has to date, as far as I'm aware, not actually become precedent in published opinions in this court. But yes, I am requesting that. And it's, of course, a question of fact, and a very difficult question of fact, so I don't think that this would be any kind of a earth-shaking business problem for companies. It would protect internal whistleblowers in very limited circumstances where they are furthering the public policy in Nevada, and they can establish that as a question of fact.
Thank you, Mr. Eckhart. Mr. Slabs, are you prepared?
So, Chief Justice Cherry, Justices, good morning. My name is Glenn Schlabs. I'm from the law firm of Sherman & Howard. We represent Newmont Mining Corporation. I would like to start, there are five claims. I would like to start with public policy, and my aim will just be to stress a few aspects of the law that this court has given and a few facts, and then I would like to address the questions that Henry raised, or the points, or some of the questions that the justices raised. This court in the area of public policy wrongful discharge has emphasized that the public policy wrongful discharge is a rare and exceptional case, exception to at-will employment. But this court has gone further and has instructed lawyers and litigants the nature of proof that must accompany the public policy wrongful discharge case in the State v. 8th Judicial District, XREL, and Zalone. This court indicated that in the public policy wrongful discharge context, a plaintiff must produce concrete evidence to establish the kind of conduct, this court called it outrageous conduct, that violates the public policy of our state. The court counseled further that it's not enough to have an impression, it's not enough to have speculation, it's not enough to guess. It also indicated, as one of the justices indicated, I forget, perhaps Justice Douglas, it's not enough to have uncorroborated statements in this area to prove the public policy wrongful discharge. And finally, as the justices' questioning indicated, this court's made it clear that there has to be a but-for causation between the protected conduct and the adverse action, in this case, the termination. I think there are a few facts that have to be considered. First of all, neither of the plaintiffs, Ms. Ainsworth or Ms. Sawyer, filed any environmental charge against Newmont until after their termination, and the record that the plaintiff produced, or that Ainsworth and Sawyer produced, indicated that NDEP, the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection, didn't conduct a good investigation and exonerated Newmont. So neither of them filed anything, and Your Honor, there is nothing in the record that has indicated that Newmont Mining Corporation did anything wrong.
Well, I guess that's where I have a little concern, and the point was made that although the contact wasn't initiated by Mr. Eggert's clients, there was a report of a quench tank that was dropped in without the proper permits.
Your Honor, there is no evidence that a permit was violated. There is no evidence in the record. I've read all 800 and how many pages of it there are. We would contest that, Your Honor.
But wait a second. On the affidavit of, and I'm following up on Justice Perigary's question about the quench tanks, the affidavit and verification of Rebecca Sawyer, and I think it's page 6, paragraph 11, and the question I'm going to ask you is this enough to generate a genuine issue of material
fact?
But she says, on one occasion I was on the phone with Dan Tekka of NDEP, Nevada Department of Environmental Protection, and he asked when Newmont was going to submit the plans for the quench tank for Lone Tree. I reported to him that said construction had already started. This resulted in Mr. Tekka's coming out to the site and threatening to shut down construction because there had been no prior approval for the construction of the quench tank. Why isn't that some evidence?
Let me first address the question you left hanging at the beginning, Your Honor. I don't think that is uncorroborated evidence, and I don't think it creates a public policy issue. However, I think that would have been Sawyer rather than Ainsworth that had said that, because it was Ms. Sawyer that had the conversation. There is still, that does not establish there was a requirement for a permit or that the permit was violated. It indicated that Mr. Tekka was surprised, but we don't know the outcome of that, Your Honor. Did Newmont receive a citation? The evidence is, the record is silent. Did Newmont violate a permit? There's no permit in the record, Your Honor. There's nothing that this court can draw that conclusion from. Now, that is Mr. story, Your Honor. Even if it's true, I think, and I'll address that right now, Ms. Sawyer tries to clothe herself in the whistleblower protection aspect of this court's public policy wrongful discharge theory. She has to fail. I think a lawyer in an earlier argument indicated something about a red herring. This whole requirement of an affirmative act that counsel argued is a red herring. If you read Judge Wagner's decision, he indicated there wasn't the Schlang kind of affirmative act, but he married it right to this court's law when he said there was no report of conduct that Sawyer reasonably believed violated the law. If you take a look at Sawyer's deposition, Your Honor, what Sawyer says in her deposition, I was asked by NDEP during the course of a routine conversation on the phone about the status of the quench tank construction. And then I'll have to parenthetically add, I told them they put it in the ground. Then they reacted as if that were a violation of the environmental permit in place. That's it. Then they reacted. When she said, yes, it's in the ground, she had no idea because they didn't react until afterwards. And after they reacted, she said they reacted as if. This court has counseled that speculation as to people's motives, this is very close to I'm blanking on the case, Your Honor, I think it's the Anzalone case. This is very close where the investigator thought that the prosecuting attorney was implying that he sneak around and get evidence illegally. And this court said, absolutely not, that's speculation. This is the same kind of speculation. Mr. Tekka reacted as if he didn't say you violated the permit. She didn't say that because he didn't. He reacted as if it had been violated. Your Honor, there is no evidence that this plaintiff believed reasonably that there was a violation of the law. There clearly is no evidence that there was a violation of the law. And by her own words, it's clear that the notion of this may, that there may have been something wrong with it, didn't arise until after she said it's in the ground. So, Your Honor, I think I'll go back to a few facts that we should bear in mind. I've indicated that there were no permit violations. Ms. Ainsworth, in response to Justice Perigary's inquiry, refused a transfer away from it, from Lone Creek, Lone Tree, before this occurred. And she let it be known, and this is unrebutted, that if I'm transferred from here, I'm just going to quit. That is unrebutted. I think the last fact that I think that are two more facts by the plaintiff's own record in this case, there's a 6-month delay between the phone call with Mr. Tekka and the layoff. Point that I'd like to leave you with before I address some of the questions Henry raised. The person who decided this is a gentleman named Jeff White. Mr. White was characterized by Plaintiff Sawyer as a good supervisor. He was characterized by both plaintiffs as a reasonable man, a man who never told them to do anything contrary to environmental policy. The fact that I would like to leave with the court before I proceed is really kind of a non-fact. There is no evidence of record that Mr. White knew about the telephone call 6 months before. None. No affidavit, no deposition, zero. There is no causal connection. There is no but-for connection in this case, Your Honor.
Is Mr. Eggert correct when he says that the separation papers on both plaintiffs who are still in the case say termination, that they're not eligible for rehire?
Your Honor, with all due respect to Henry, that is not in the record. The citation in his brief is to the complaint. It's to the allegations in the complaint. That is not in evidence before this court in the record on appeal. Your Honor, I think as far as the internal complaints, from the Wiltsy decision on, there's not been a contrary decision. Internal complaints don't a whistleblower case make, period. What the plaintiff has attempted to do is to wrap internal complaints, borrowing dicta from Bigelow, and has said, well, the internal complaints amount to a refusal to act. And again, in the Bigelow decision that this court has not picked up on since, said, well, it's possible that an internal complaint might arise to a refusal or might arise to that level as long as it amounts to a refusal, and then use the D'Angelo example, the minor being required to go into a cyanide pit with an open stomach wound. That's not this case, Your Honor. If there was internal agitation here, it didn't amount to a refusal. And without a refusal, the claim fails. Your Honor, the essence of this court's decisions from Bigelow down is that in the refusal to perform an illegal act arm of this tort, there is a confrontation. There is a confrontation where the employer says, if NDEP calls you on the phone, don't tell them about the quench take, and if they ask, you lie. It's that kind of confrontation. It's absent from this case, Your Honor. And why is it important to have that confrontation? It's because that crystallizes the issue. It indicates the causal connection. It indicates the refusal to go along with policy that violates the public policy of our state. That's absent in this case, Your Honor, completely. As far as the Ainsworth conversation, or excuse me, the Sawyer conversation, and I like to stress, Ms. Ainsworth made no conversation. I just want to reemphasize this point, Your Honor. I want to reemphasize that when she answered the question, it's buried, there wasn't a clue that anything was wrong. There is no evidence of record that she knew. And in fact, her own words in her deposition, as opposed to an affidavit, then Mr. Decker reacted as if we were doing something wrong. This court requires more than that, Your Honor. It requires concrete evidence that isn't speculative. Sorry, Your Honor. There's no evidence of the but-for connection that we need to prove a tort in this case. There is no evidence of record that Mr. White, the decision maker, knew about a phone call or cared about their concerns about the environment. He shared them. The plaintiffs...
Mr. Schlab, before you move on...
Yes, sir.
Did you object in the district court to the admissibility of any of the statements made in the Sawyer affidavit?
No, Your Honor.
On grounds that they were hearsay or any other ground?
Your Honor, there was no objection per se because it was on summary judgment. It was noted in the briefs on summary judgment that at least some of the evidence was inadmissible for various reasons. I honestly couldn't swear to the court as an officer that it was done on the ground of hearsay. Your Honor, no evidence of but-for. I think I have covered that. As far as the off-site audit team, there's no corroboratory evidence of that. The evidence, supposedly the conduct of these plaintiffs, specifically Sawyer, made them unpopular, and certainly Newmont knew. That's the end of the rationale in the briefing on the case. There is no evidence that the plaintiffs were made to be unpopular. There is no evidence that Mr. White knew. In fact, the citation to certainly Newmont knew at record 43, 15 to 17 is a cite to the complaint. And as this court knows, allegations don't defeat summary judgment. The plaintiff indicated at opening that all inferences are drawn in favor of the plaintiff in the case. This court has instructed, however, that it is properly supported evidence to which inferences are given, and that general, conclusory, or unsupported allegations don't make it. And that's what we have in this case, Your Honor. The plaintiff urged us to adopt this court to adopt a pretext analysis. If so, there is no evidence of pretext that is in falseness in Mr. White's decision. Your Honor, may I have 1 minute to summarize?
I'll give you a minute. Go ahead.
Your Honor, as far as the contract claim, the plaintiffs have been consistent in ignoring the disclaimer in the handbook. It's in the record. There's another disclaimer in the ethics code. This court has held that if an employer wants to avoid contract problems, have a disclaimer. Not on summary judgment, not in opening brief, not in reply brief, and not in oral argument has plaintiff's counsel addressed to this court the impact of the disclaimer in this case. The disclaimer defeats the contract claims, Your Honor. Your Honor, the matters that are cited by plaintiffs in the involving environmental compliance are not promissory. They don't change at-will status, meaning these plaintiffs can be discharged at will for any reason that doesn't violate public policy. I've told this court why public policy hasn't been offended, and we would urge you to uphold Judge Wagner's rulings below. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Regard, how about 2 minutes in rebuttal, please?
First, addressing the issue of the contract case, this court has stated that if there is a disclaimer and that And there's another clause that creates a certain contract provisions. The contract can be considered ambiguous, and that question should be submitted to a trier of fact. And furthermore, the provisions say that the contract can't be modified subsequently except by the HR director in a signed document. But this is not any subsequent modification. This is a grant by Newmont from the beginning, ad initio, that they have an open door policy that protects internal whistleblowing. And we're alleging that policy was violated. And there is a lot, there's the affidavits of both appellants that were attached to their opposition to the motion for summary judgment recount numerous instances, not just corporate audit, but also the issues with the autoclave smokestack emissions and the unionized ammonia and potentially acid-generating material. There are just numerous instances where they clashed with their supervisors. And it's true, they did respect Jeff White, but there was a meeting, it's established, there was a meeting with Jeff White and John Mudge and I think Al Sultani prior to their terminations. So there's no evidence that he was the only one that made that decision.
Counsel, do you have to have violations to meet the whistleblower standard? Because counsel asserted there was nothing in the record that indicates there actually were any violations, only that your client or one of your clients was asserting some issues.
No, it's enough to have a good faith belief of in violations to establish a whistleblower claim, and that's been well established in many cases. And I would submit that like my clients have just lost their jobs. We didn't have resources to do everything we would have liked to do, but if there had been a trial, we could have asked those questions of the witnesses. And that's what we're asking the court for the opportunity to present this evidence. And I'd ask the court to reverse all the issues that it feels are warranted as set forth in the briefs.
Court thanks Mr. Eckhardt, Mr. Schlebs for their interesting, informative arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted, and we'll be in a very brief recess for about 5 minutes.